A blessed day. Appreciate those who've already led us in our coming into the presence of the Lord in prayer and praise. If you've got your Bibles with you, you might open them to Joshua chapter 13. Joshua chapter 13, as we continue our journey with Joshua. And we're drawing near the end of the book of Joshua in our studies together, but I hope that you've been enriched by it, and even though we're getting near the end, I don't think the importance is decreasing at all, and I hope that you feel the same way as we look at this together. We're going to focus, of course we're not going to read all of these, but we're going to focus on really events that are happening in Joshua chapters 13 through 19. Some things that have come along, technology, that have been a tremendous aid to those who like to travel are GPS systems and MapQuest. You know, you can get on a computer and you can type in your address, you can type in the address of where it is you want to go, and you can tell it to get directions, and MapQuest will pull you up a map. It'll give you a detailed layout of what you need to do and where you need to turn, a way to get from where you are to where you want to be. It'll print out a map, you know, with the route highlighted, I think usually in purple, and can, with those two things, you can get right where you want to be. If you've got a GPS system, you can buy those that plug into your cigarette lighter, or many cars now are coming with those installed. And you know, you can do basically the same thing. And of course, you can even get them that'll talk to you. I remember we had one in Arizona, and the group actually named the GPS we had there, Susie or something like that. And so you probably in your car or been in a car with somebody else where you had that automated what usually sounds like a female voice talking to you saying, you know, turn left, turn right. And I've been very grateful that mine doesn't say, hey, turn around, you big dummy, because you just missed your turn. But those things can be a tremendous help, helping us to find out where we are when we're not sure where we are, we're lost, but also in helping us to get to where we want to be and we need to be. Well, today we are on a map quest as we look at Joshua chapters 13 through 19. And we're focusing on a spiritual map quest. We're focusing on the people of God as they are hunting and looking for their inheritance. They have come into the promised land, but it's a new land to them. Many years before, their forefathers had been in this land. Abraham had been in this land, and Isaac and Jacob. But these folks had not been there. Many, many years have passed, and they have been through some periods of slavery, others, all of them actually wandering in the wilderness. And now they've gone into the promised land. Most think it took about 7 years to get control of the land. Some of these things we've been looking at as far as these battles, the taking of Jericho and Ai and the fight against the southern coalition and the fight against the northern coalition. Now, you're reading through your Bibles, it sounds like it's just one day after the other. But most think it took 5 to 7 years for them to get through these early battles and get to a stage that they now have possession of the better part of the land. And so now they're at a point that the people are ready to find out about their inheritance. They've been hearing about this inheritance for years. They've been told the land has been promised to them and that their tribe will have their own chunk of land and their clan will have their own chunk of land and their personal family will have their own chunk of land. And so now it is the moment to find out where their inheritance is going to be. If you look at Joshua chapter 13, I want you to notice something that is found just there briefly at the beginning of verse 2. There God says to Joshua, "This is the land that remains." And then starting with a discussion of the Philistine region, He then lays out the parts of the land that have not yet been conquered. Now we've got a map here, and if you look at this map, maybe you can see it and see the layout. But if you look at the middle of the map, you kind of got the darker brown area. That represents what they now control. In those original attacks, remember we talked about when they crossed over the Jordan River from the eastern side to the western side, they kind of cut a swath right through the middle of the country, then they went south, and then they went north. And so as you look at what they've conquered so far, they successfully control basically the middle of the country from north to south. They've also conquered the same expanse on the eastern side of the Jordan River. So you can see they've got control of the major part of the land. They now control most of the major cities. Some of the major cities they don't have not actually taken down the walls yet, but they've destroyed their military force and their king in some of those battles. So what you see that now they've got the control of the better part of the land, they can now begin to make decisions about who gets what part of the land. But we also need to recognize that they don't control everything yet. And so as you look at this map, the lighter brown areas, those are the parts of the promised land that they don't control yet. And there in Joshua chapter 13, where he is describing, here's what you haven't taken yet, he's talking about those lighter brown areas that are outside the center section. And so what he's basically going to do is say, okay, it's now time to get the rest of this, but before we do that, we need to spread out the inheritance. Now, as we look at this map or look at this particular study, I want us to focus on two things. I want us to focus on the division and the decision. I want us to look at the division of the land. I want us to ask the question, why did they do it this way? Why did these people get these areas? And we won't go into great deal on that. But why especially, I guess the question I mainly want to deal with is why this order? And some say it's strategic. Some say it's prophetic. Some say it's a combination thereof. So we'll talk just a little bit about that. And once we've talked about the division of the land, I want us to talk about the decision. And as we talk about that, I want us to talk about how and how much. So let's take a few moments and just see what we can learn from the dividing up of the land. My guess is if you've ever read through this before, I know a lot of our young folks have read through it to get ready for the Bible Bowl and so forth for lads to leaders. My guess is if you look through this and you got to this section, this was a section you wanted to skip over. Okay, you kind of think there's nothing exciting. It's just a bunch of lists of territories and towns, and you're thinking, you know, this is the boring section. But there's some good stuff there, and we're not going to read through all those town lists. But I want us to see kind of a big picture, a bird's eye, glimpse view, if you will, looking down from above at what's happening here. And a little bit about why it's so significant. The main reason it's significant is because it's the fulfillment of a promise. It's what these people have looked forward to their entire lives, and now it's about to become real. Now, as we think about what's going on here, let's look at a map that lays out the divisions of the land and lays out who got what. And I hope you can see well enough on the screen to see what they tried to do is they tried to show you the sections that ended up being allotted to the different tribes, to 12 tribes. You've got 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan River, and then you've got the other 9.5 on the western side. We tried to put a little white arrow going down from the Sea of Galilee down to the Jordan River, but that little white arrow kind of splitting the land there, that represents where the Jordan River is, flowing from the Sea of Galilee up in the north down to the Dead Sea down in the south. And so you've got the 12 tribes split up on either side. The tribe of Manasseh is split into two parts. And basically you've got Manasseh East and Manasseh West. And so you'll see them twice on the map. So I want you to kind of look at the layout of the land. And I want us to think about why this way, maybe why in this order. Now let's look at a map here that gives us the order in which the tribes got their inheritance. You can see starting up there at the top with Reuben. You can see them moving down all the way to Dan at the bottom of your list. And I tried to do some different colorings here because you're going to find that Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh, some call them Manasseh East, the folks that live on the east side of the Jordan River, that group got theirs first, and so I've kind of got them colored together. And then Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh West, they're going to get theirs next. And then once that's done, it basically amounts to 5 tribes. You've got 2.5 on the east and 2.5 on the west. Then you've got 7 left, if I add it up. And if I mess up any of my addition, you can feel free to fix me and correct me when we get done. But you got 7 tribes left, and then they stop at that point. They send out map drawers. They send out representatives from these tribes. They travel over the land. They look at what's left. They draw out a map. They bring it back to Moses. Back to Joshua, and he enters it in the book. You're going to find a consistent pattern with Moses and Joshua of writing things down, of keeping things for posterity. So they basically write down what they find. They have maps. And then he says, basically, okay, we need to divide this map up into 7 parts. And now we're going to draw lots. And so the seven tribes that haven't gotten their inheritance yet, they get one of these plots of land that have been drawn out by the map makers. And again, it's interesting the strategy he uses. Because what he does is he has representatives from each tribe go to help draw out the land. So when they get done with the map, they can't say, oh, your tribe, you know, drew the map that way. Well, they all pitched in together to do the map and to lay out the land. Then they gave the allotment by actually the drawing of lots. And I think I've told you before, when on my dad's side of the family, when my grandmother passed away, my grandfather had passed away first when I was in high school, my grandmother passed away when I was in college. And basically, you know, you have this process of what do you do with the family things. And so anything that you gave Granny and Granddaddy, you kept. And everything else, the five brothers and sisters worked together to make five equal piles of what belonged to their parents. And each one made sure that every pile had something in it that they really wanted. Then once they got it in five equal piles, everybody agreed to the piles. Then basically you just throw five numbers in the hat and pull out a number and that's your pile. Well, basically what's going on here in a similar way is they draw up the map, they divide it into seven parts, you draw lots, pick your number, and that's your plot of land that you get. But there's an order to that, and often the drawing of lots was used in the Old Testament as a way for God to control what happened. God was seen in this circumstance as controlling who got what lot when. And so as you look at how the land's laid out, it's kind of an interesting thing to me, looking at how it happened. 2.5 get it here from Moses before they ever take possession of the land on the western side. Then 2.5 get theirs. Then they draw a map. Then they draw lots. And the other seven get theirs. So let's talk about that. As far as strategy, I want you to notice here, first of all, let's pull up an arrow that shows pointing up to the north on the eastern side and then over to the west, kind of at the southern end of Jordan. In other words, if you look at the layout of the order, Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh East, they get theirs first over on the eastern side. And then once they start giving out allotments on the western side, Judah comes first. And if you look at strategically what happens, is that as soon as they get to this point, where basically 3.5 tribes have their inheritance, then two of the four borders are immediately taken. Okay? If you put the Mediterranean Sea on the western side, you begin to realize that now, with the Mediterranean serving as a border on the western side, the land is protected on three of its four sides after 3.5 tribes get their inheritance. The entire eastern side is protected. The western side has the Mediterranean Sea. The southern end is now controlled by Judah. And so some believe that there's some strategic aspects to what's going on in this, that God designed it this way to give the land protection as quickly as possible. And so that by the time you get done with these 3.5 tribes, you only have one little window where an enemy can come in without encountering an Israelite, and that's up north in between the Sea of Galilee and the Mediterranean Sea. And then basically what they do there, and you maybe see with this arrow, is once then it's given to Judah, they basically give out tribal allotments going from the south moving up to the north. You're going to go to Ephraim and then Manasseh, and then you'll come back in and fill in a couple of open spots down the south, and then you're going to finish in by filling up some open spots up north. In fact, the four of the last five tribes who get tribal allotments are filling in those spots up around the Sea of Galilee, in between the Sea of Galilee and the Mediterranean Sea. And the tribe of Dan is going to be last. And I'll talk about in a few moments my opinion on why I think Dan may have gone last. And so some say it's strategic, that this is all designed, the way the tribes are getting their allotment has to do with what allows the land to be protected the fastest. Okay? Now let's talk about prophetic. I think there are some other reasons potentially for why it happens this way. First of all, if you look in Joshua chapter 13, verses 7 through 9, you're going to find that the 2.5 tribes on the eastern side got their allotment because of Moses. Basically, the children of Israel conquered the land of the Amorites on that side of the river, and 2.5 tribes came to Moses and they said, "Listen, we like this spot. I know we're supposed to cross over to the western side and take possession of it, but we already own this and we kind of like it. So can we have this?" And so Moses says, "Yes, I will allow the 2.5 tribes of you, to have this side of the river if you'll send your warriors over and help us to capture the other side of the river. They agreed to it. And so it was a decision made by Moses before Joshua took over leadership. Now, if we move on to Joshua chapter 14, you can look in Joshua 14 and Joshua 17, just a couple of brief examples. Judah is next in line after these 2.5 tribes to get their inheritance. And you'll find that they went as a delegation to Joshua. It says the leaders of Judah with Caleb, who's a member of that tribe, they go and present themselves to Joshua. And as a part of that discussion, Caleb in particular says, I want you to remember a promise that was made to me by Moses about a plot of land I was supposed to get. If you go to Joshua chapter 17, you then have a family that's in the line of Manasseh. Okay, and Manasseh is going to be the last of this early group to get their inheritance. Remember Manasseh, this is the western group of Manasseh. You got Manasseh east and Manasseh west. And so they come to Moses, in particular one branch of that family. It was a family where the father had no sons to pass the inheritance on to. He only has daughters. And so you have a delegation, the daughters come to Joshua, and they say, Joshua, Moses made a promise to us. Moses promised us that we didn't have brothers, but that we would get a section of land for our own. I think when we look at those, it's entirely possible that the reason you have Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh, and then on the eastern side, Reuben, Gad, and the other half-tribe of Manasseh, the reason they get their allotments early without having to draw up the map and divide it in 7 parts and then cast lots is that I believe their allotments may have been based on promises made by Moses. And that Moses told to these tribes, here, you get certain areas, and certain groups within the family got areas. And then basically what they did is they said, okay, first let's settle the people Moses made promises to. Once we've done that, that leads 7 tribes. Now let's get their settlement. I think that's entirely possible that that's what's going on. But I also think we can go all the way beyond just promises made by Moses, go all the way back to prophecies that were made back in the book of Genesis. If you go back to Genesis, first of all, look in Genesis chapter 48 at the end of the chapter. Jacob is nearing death, and he calls the 2 sons of Joseph before him. His 2 sons are Manasseh and Ephraim. Manasseh is the oldest, Ephraim is the youngest. Now what he says is, among these 2 brothers, even though Ephraim's the youngest, he's going to be the leader. In their world, basically the oldest boy generally got 2 things in the family. Number one, he got the leadership of the family. And number two, he got a double portion of the blessing. Let's say you had a family with 7 kids in it. And mom and dad pass away, how do they divide up the property? If there's 7 children, what they would do is they would divide it into 8 parts. And you might say, why 8 parts? There's 7 children. Because the oldest boy got 2 portions. Okay, and that's just how it worked. And so what happens at the end of Genesis 48 is that God, through Jacob, says to Joseph, you are going to get the birthright, the double blessing. You're going to get 2 portions of land through your 2 sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. So he makes a special promise to Joseph that he's going to get a double portion of land. He's going to get extra land through his 2 sons. Now this was supposed to go to Reuben, but Reuben lost it because of his sins. Now then if we go on to chapter 49, around verses 8 through 10, we're going to read about promises that Jacob made to Judah. And basically what he says to Judah is, he says, the scepter will not pass from you until Shiloh comes. Now that's a whole separate lesson. I tend to think it's possible that Shiloh is referring to the coming of Christ. But as we look at what's going on in the story, he's saying to Judah, your family will have the scepter of leadership. Okay, when you get into the kings, the first king is from Benjamin, the rest of the kings are from Judah. As you look at the future of Israel, and especially the southern kingdom once the people of Israel divide into 2 parts. And so what I'm trying to say is that Jacob said, Reuben, you were supposed to be the leader of the family, and you were supposed to get a double blessing. But because of your sins, I'm taking that away and I'm going to divide it up among your brothers. I'm going to give the leadership of the family to Judah. I'm going to give the double blessing to the descendants of Joseph. You can also look at, like in verses 6 and 7, because of the mistakes of Simeon and Levi, we talked about last week or the week before, that Simeon and Levi would be scattered among the tribes. And so when you think about that map we saw earlier, Simeon's allotment is right in the middle of Judah, and Levi scattered among all the tribes. And then if you look there in chapter 49 at what he says to Dan, he makes the statement to the tribe of Dan. Remember, Dan's the one that got theirs last. He says to Dan that they are like a snake that's hiding along the road. And there was a horned adder that would hide in the sand along the trails in the ancient world, and that they were known to snap or bite the ankles of the horses and cause the horses to throw their riders. And that's what Dan was going to be. If you get over to Judges chapter 18, the tribe of Dan was the tribe that introduced idol worship into the nation of Israel. They went up into a region that wasn't theirs and captured a city of Laish that wasn't in their territory. And there they set up a place of worship with their own priests and their own false gods. And so, in fact, I think when you get to the book of Revelation in the list of tribes, I don't believe Dan is even listed. And so I believe because of that, that is why Dan is last in this allotment. And so even though they're drawing lots, I believe God and His prophetic promises are involved in what's going on. When they got over to the western side, why did Judah get their allotment first? I believe it's because God said Judah was going to be leader of the family. Why is it that next the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, the descendants of Joseph, got theirs next? Because God promised to Joseph that his children would get a double blessing and a double inheritance. And then it proceeds from there. In other words, I guess what I'm trying to say is what is happening here is not haphazard. It's not random. It is based on promise and prophecy that God is involved in what's going on, and it's going to take place just as God intended. But I want us to think about, I guess really this is where the rubber meets the road for us, the decision. If you go back to chapter 13, I want you to notice, beginning in verse 1, "Now Joshua was old and advanced in years when the Lord said to him, 'You are very old and advanced in years, and very much of the land remains to be possessed. This is the land that remains.'" And then verse 2 down through verse 6, he lays out what remains to be taken. And starting in verse 7, he says, "Now therefore, apportion this land for an inheritance to the nine tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh." So two and a half tribes already have their stuff on the eastern side. So he says, you have control of the land, but you have not conquered every part of the land. So what I need you to do is I need you to divide the land up among the people. I want you to notice something that's in verse 6. God says to Joshua, "I will drive them out from before the sons of Israel. Only allot it to Israel for an inheritance as I have commanded you." Basically, up to this point, what they have been doing is marching through the region and through the land as a group, conquering city after city, or conquering a group of kings and their warriors who've waged war against them. But the strategy is going to change. He says, "Joshua, you're getting older." Most put Joshua at this time somewhere in the ballpark of the age of 90. He would die at an age of 110. But basically says, "You're getting older." And says, "There's still land to be taken, but here's how we're going to do it. Instead of everybody kind of as a joint army, kind of rampaging through the land, taking cities and conquering coalitions, he says, I want you to allot the land to the tribes that are going to live there and then let them do the cleanup work. In other words, if you get a plot of land of the land of Judah, it's Judah's responsibility to take everything that's not taken yet. If you allot some land to Manasseh West, then it's Manasseh's descendants and that tribe to take their possession of their land. This is the point where possession of the land becomes personal. It's your land. If you want it, then you take it. And so as we think about what's going on here, the how of taking the land is ultimately God. God says, I will scatter them before Israel. I will give them the victory. But up to this point, he's given the victory through the nation. Now what he's going to do is he's going to narrow it down to the tribe. Instead of the nation conquering land, each tribe is going to conquer the cities and the land in their own inheritance. Each individual tribe is now responsible for their spot, their inheritance. How much they get is ultimately up to them. What God does is He says, here's what I've given to you. And He makes an overall list of the land. He says, here's how far the land that is yours stretches. Whether it's going towards Egypt or the Mediterranean or to the east or north. He says, here, this is yours. And then to each tribe, He says, this is your allotment. This whole thing can be yours. Now go get it. They know how much they can have. The question is how much they will have. And we'll talk about tonight whether they got everything God promised them. And we'll talk more about why they may have or may not have gotten everything God promised them. But basically to this point, God says, here's what you can have. I will help you get the victory. I just need people who are willing to go out and fight. Okay, you say, okay, that was semi-interesting, preacher. I understood about one-third of it. What in the world does it have to do with my life? What the MapQuest has to do with us is that I think that every one of us, if we're God's people, are on a mission to find our inheritance. If we go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it says in verse 18 that God put every part in the body just like He wanted it, so that no part of the body can say to another part of the body, I don't need you. If you go to Romans chapter 12, starting around verse 4, He basically talks about that in the body, the members are different. You know, not every part of the body is the same. And so since we have different members, different parts, according to the grace of God, He says, let each one exercise them accordingly. So, 1 Corinthians 12 says, nobody can say that another part of the body is not important. In Romans chapter 12, it says we need to exercise the gifts that are given to us based on the grace of God. In other words, my point is, as a part of God's body, we all have an inheritance. We all have a plot. We all have a place. We all have an area where we can minister and we can work. Because that's exactly what God did to the tribe. He said, tribe, this is your spot. Judah, here you go. This is yours. You conquer it. You use it to God's glory and you defeat the evildoers in the land. And it seems to me that 1 Corinthians 12 and Romans 12 are saying to Christians, here, Christian, God has made for you a plot. Some of you are a hand, some of you are an arm, some of you are an elbow, some of you are an ear, some of you are a foot. This is your plot. Conquer it, use it to God's glory. In fact, in Ephesians chapter 4, it even says God put in place some people who can help us to find our spot. Just like a global positioning system can help us to find where we are and where we need to be. It says that that God put in place apostles and prophets and elders and evangelists to assist people in their global positioning, to find their inheritance, to find their mission, and to be able to use their mission to God's glory. And you look there at this list in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. It says, the work of elders and evangelists is in part the equipping of the saints, preparing the saints to be able to use and find their inheritance. And that's what this day is all about. The reason we're going to, in the Bible class hour, all gather here and look at Graymere's plan of service, Graymere's GPS, is that it's an attempt by our elders and deacons to help us find our inheritance, a place where we can serve. And as we think about being globally positioned, being where God wants us to be, I think there's some things that can help us to find that. If we'll take this and combine it to what they're about to talk about as far as areas of need and opportunity, I think first of all we look at what are my assets? What do I have that's at my disposal that I can use to God's glory? It can be a car, it can be a home, it can be income, whatever. What is it I possess that can glorify God? What are my abilities? What is it that I know how to do? What is it I'm good at? What is it that I like to do? Is it music? Is it building things? Is it repairing things? Is it speaking? What is it? What are my abilities given to me as gifts from God? What is available to me? That's something that maybe I don't have now, whether it's an asset or an ability, but I can have. In other words, there may be something that I've never done before and I currently do not have the ability to do, but I could learn how to do it. I could be trained in it. I could step out into new areas. You know, Moses had never led 2 million people out of Egypt until he did it. He didn't go in and say, "Hey, I've done this before, this is old hat." There had to come a point where he had to learn how do you lead 2 million people. And so for all of us, there are going to be times when we step out and try something in ministry that we've never done before, but we make a commitment we're going to learn. And in the end, it's all about finding an area of need and opportunity. Author and preacher David Farr in the book Men of God was commenting on the parable of the talents told by Jesus. And he came up with this simple analogy that I think has some power to it. It says, basically, ability plus opportunity equals responsibility. If I am able to do something and there's a need for it, then I need to do it. And so I want to challenge us to think about these things in our lives and to combine these things together to find a place for our inheritance, a place for us to minister and to use our gifts to God's glory. Would you take out your psalm books and turn to the hymn of encouragement? As you turn there, I don't know if any of you watched the NFL draft yesterday, but it's always interesting to kind of watch, and I don't always get to, but I did tape it and watch it a little bit last night. But it's interesting to watch these guys and their families. They're gathered there, either they're in homes or they're in New York City, waiting to see where their pick is going to come. I remember reading about or hearing them talk about one young man who played at the University of Mississippi. And he grew up in a family, he never knew his dad. His mom was a drug user and was in and out, I guess, of treatment in prison. And basically, he ended up being, because he and his other siblings, I think there were 13 of them, I may not have the number right, but they were basically left to fend for themselves. And so finally, social services took them away from the mother, scattered them in different homes. And he ended up getting the opportunity to go to a Christian-based school. And while he was there, one day, he's walking down the street when it's really cold outside in a t-shirt and a pair of shorts, and a girl from a different race who goes to school with him pointed him out to her mother and said, "Look, he's out here walking in the cold with, you know, almost nothing to wear." And many times he didn't have much to eat. And so that family started buying him clothes, started helping to get him something to eat, eventually moved into the home with them, and they said, "You can just come live with us." He would later say that to his adoptive mom, "It was the first person ever told me that they loved me." And he said, "I felt like they really wanted me." They moved in, and it wasn't until his junior year in high school that the football coach came and said, "You want to come play football?" Never tried it before, but he's a big boy, 6'5", and just a big kid. And so he plays football his junior and senior year. He's incredible. He gets a scholarship to go play at Ole Miss. And then yesterday, he's drafted in the first round. Just an incredible rags-to-riches story, if you will. But I want you to realize that's what all of us are. That when it comes to God's draft, we're all spiritually poor. But God says, "You matter to me. I love you. I will adopt you as my child." And let me tell you something. I need everybody on my team. You see, when the draft is over today, there will be people unchosen. There will be people left out. But if you're in God's kingdom, He needs every single person. Nobody goes undrafted. The opportunity's there. What we need is a willingness to act. First of all, I need to act by becoming a child of God. If you've never expressed your faith in repentance, confession, and baptism, I beg you to do that this morning. If you're a child of God and you are not living the life you need to be living, I pray that you'll come and let us pray about that and encourage you, as later we may need you to do the same for us. But I want to challenge all of us to be involved, to find our inheritance, and use it to God's glory. If we can help you in that, then please come as we stand and sing.